is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Bloomberg Asia. China's factories struggle with slow dismantling of COVID curbs. Subhead. Xi seeks new era after COVID's painful impact. I welcome Mary Kissel, Executive Vice President of Stevens Incorporated, former senior advisor to the Secretary of State, former Wall Street Journal editorial board based in Hong Kong, traveling throughout Asia, to help us understand these headlines. This is Xi Jinping, the absolute authority of everything in China, including the COVID zero policy that has led to a crushing of the spirit of the major cities and a most recent protest by brave young people and people not so young against the COVID zero as a murderer of people, at least in Urumqi, when people were locked in their apartments and the fire companies were unable to get to save them. But at the same time, the damaging of the Chinese miracle to the point that we're now looking at what ordinarily would be considered a recession. Mary, a very good evening to you. The COVID zero protests are the centerpiece of conversation these last days. The question is this about the pandemic or is this about the authority in Beijing being challenged by spontaneity, apparently without a center in the streets? Good evening to you, Mary.
Good evening, John. It's always great to be with you. I think it's difficult to generalize about a nation of more than a billion people, about which we have very little good information because they don't allow our people to be on the ground in the streets talking to the everyday Chinese citizen, unfortunately. I think we can say a couple of things. First of all, obviously, the zero COVID policy that was championed by the general secretary has created an atmosphere so suffocating and so intolerable that it does seem to have been the main driver behind many of these protests. But that being said, there are other angles here that I think are equally as important. Firstly, you are seeing students at the major universities calling for democracy. You're seeing many women in China upset about the fact that they can't feed their families. They have, you know, problems obtaining food during the lockdowns and other issues. You're seeing anger directed at the party propaganda machine that just spouts a bunch of lies all the time. That's the feature, not the bug of propaganda. So there are many aspects to these protests, but I think it's important for listeners to always revert back to the basic fact here, which is that this is a totalitarian regime. Totalitarian regimes are inherently opaque and they are inherently unstable. And so it's something I repeat a lot. It sounds very basic and almost, you know, silly because it's so elementary. But you know, we have to recognize that fact. And I think, you know, many Americans, particularly American businesses, are starting to wake up and to realize that, you know, they can't count on communist China, nor should they. And unfortunately, again, you know, the main price here is obviously paid by the Chinese people who suffer under the yoke of this regime.
Bloomberg reporting, President Xi Jinping, they call him a president, Mary, though he's unelected. I call him General Secretary, following your guidance. General Secretary Xi Jinping's insistence on adhering to a so-called COVID zero policy isolated China as other countries had suffered far worse outbreaks returned to a semblance of pre-pandemic life. But 3 years after the first documented case, the country has given a series of signals that suggest it's ready to loosen the stringent regime. I'll stop there. Mary, this is not trustworthy because the regime was never, to my understanding, entirely about the pandemic. It was also about control. Anecdote, a man going to challenged a bank where he deposited, I think, something the equivalent of $800,000, challenged that bank because he wasn't able to access it, found his smartphone switched to a red warning, you've got to report to a COVID zero camp and stay there indefinitely. In other words, the anecdote is that they were using the COVID zero for control in its collapse of its property market. Is that anecdote accurate, Mary? And is COVID zero about the disease or is it about authority?
Well, from what we know, it's probably about both, with more emphasis on the former. Xi Jinping has used COVID, which let's not forget, the Chinese Communist Party created. So when you say murderers, they're not just murderers for locking the, you know, average Chinese up in their apartment buildings, but they're murderers for killing millions of people around the world. We should never forget that. And they've never suffered any consequence for that, which I think is an abomination. You know, the level of control over the average Chinese citizen is something that it's very hard for us to imagine in the West. These family units have been grouped into pairs of 10, just like in the emperor's days, where you know, you have a captain or a leader of the group who can arbitrarily, you know, lock you in their apartment or you know, demand money from you or do what they like. I mean, it's control down to the family unit within where, you know, the places that you live. And for many older Chinese, they remember the Cultural Revolution. They remember, you know, what happened when they had overlords living next door. And this is a really, really violent and scary period. And I think, you know, while some Chinese perhaps in the big cities might have thought, well, you know, whatever's going on in Xinjiang, if, by the way, they can get information about what's actually going on in Xinjiang or there's genocide being committed, many, many people can't get that information because of the Great Firewall. But for those who did know, you know, they might have thought, well, gosh, that's really far away from me. It's in the far western part of China. It's bordering Kazakhstan. It doesn't impact my life. But when these controls and the, you know, this kind of intrusion into your everyday life starts happening to you, well, gosh, you know, that's a different story. And so, you know, I think that the tactic from Beijing now is twofold. On the one hand, to ease up a little bit on the restrictions and to change the propaganda, you know, to make COVID sound less scary on the one hand. But on the other hand, it's to use this massive security and surveillance state to impose what I'm calling the quiet terror onto Chinese citizens. That, you know, if you don't get off the streets and we record your face, it's not just you who's going to suffer. You know, we're going to lock up your mom. We're going to kick your kid out of school. We're going to prevent you from leaving the country. You know, there are any number of ways now that this state can crack down on its citizenry. And again, I think it's very hard to understand if you're living in a free society just what that feels like. But it is terror. And it's terror that goes far beyond anything else we've ever seen, because we've never had a totalitarian state with these tools at its disposal.
Mary, were you surprised by the protests? You have long experience in Asia. You know a great deal about the Chinese culture. Had you expected that there would be a spontaneous rising on iPhones like that?
Yes, because we've seen it throughout the past several decades. You saw it in the 70s with the Democracy Wall movement, saw it in the 80s with the Tiananmen Square protests, which happened throughout China. You saw it before the Beijing Olympics with Charter 08. You saw it most recently in Hong Kong, where the Hong Kongers displayed extraordinary courage in the face of overwhelming pressure and surveillance and threats and thuggery from the CCP and their proxies in Hong Kong. So all you have to do is look at the historical record to understand that when given the chance or when provoked to a certain extent, the Chinese people, you know, they want their freedom. And that's separate and distinct from the elites that are members of the Chinese Communist Party who benefit from this system. We're not talking about the party. They have their own incentives, and it's just to preserve their power. But the Chinese people writ large want something better. And I think it's important that we speak to the people, and we speak over the party, which is something that Reagan used to do, speaking over the Soviet leadership to the Russian people. We need to revive that practice.
A European point of view. Recently, the Chancellor of Germany, Olaf Scholz, visited Xi Jinping in an embassy that was a puzzle at the time, given the status of the Ukraine war, and now publishes an essay, a very lengthy essay covering all aspects of the future. But I want to concentrate on the section he calls the China Challenge. China's rise does not warrant isolating Beijing or curbing cooperation, writes the Chancellor in Foreign Affairs. But neither does China's growing power justify claims for hegemony in Asia and beyond. Mary, that is fence sitting. Is that an accurate description of what you observed traveling the world, and especially in Europe, that there's doubt that Europe understands the threat of China?
It's just extraordinarily naive. And the irony is that he made those comments around the same time that China expert Dede Kirsten-Tatlow published a major expose in Newsweek explaining all of the illegal extraterritorial Chinese police stations within Germany, in many cities in Germany, as well as here in the United States. It's clear what Xi Jinping's intent is. He says it all of the time. It's to struggle against the West. It's to achieve supremacy over the United States. It's to make China the center of the world and its regime and its way of life, the way of life that we have here. In other words, make the world safe for totalitarianism again, the Chinese version of it. So Olaf Scholz reads his intelligence reports, but you know what? You don't even need to read that to understand what the intent is in Beijing. And I think what Scholz is trying to do is he is trying to satisfy various parts of his very tenuous coalition that he runs Germany with and, you know, not alienate the business leaders in Germany who still want to make a lot of money out of China. That's why he took lots of business leaders to Beijing, while at the same time acknowledging that, yes, actually, there are kind of some problems here. Another irony, John, this also comes at a time when you see European level, EU level diplomats start to come around to where the United States and Britain are, which is to say that China does not have good intentions for us. We have to prepare for this threat. We need to cooperate with each other. So Germany is starting to look like an outlier here. And I don't know when that changes, but I hate to be cynical about it. But Germany was overly reliant on Russia for its exports. And now that market is gone. And so you could see Scholz's advances here toward Beijing as, you know, simply a crass way to replace those profits. Sad to say, but I think that's probably truer than not.
We're headed to Europe. Mary Kissel, the executive vice president of Stevens Incorporated, former senior advisor to the Secretary of State. I'm John Batchelor.